accused of funding armed groups to secure its business in Syria. French firm Lafarge could face renewed charges of complicity in crimes against humanity. So what role do foreign companies play in fueling conflicts, and could they be held accountable? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. Lafarge is facing one of the most serious accusations laid against a French company over its actions in Syria. The Paris Court of Appeal had dismissed crimes against humanity charge against the cement giant in 2019. But that ruling has just been overturned by France's top court. Lafarge was accused of paying millions of dollars to fighters, including ISIL, to keep its factory open. The company eventually left Syria in 2014 after ISIL seized its plant northeast of Aleppo. It has admitted some mistakes but denies the allegations against it. The Court of Cassation's decision does not mean the company will automatically face trial, but it's referred the matter back to investigating magistrates to reconsider the complicity charge, saying, "One can be complicit in crimes against humanity even if there's no intention of being associated with the crimes committed." It added, knowingly paying several million dollars to an organization whose sole purpose was exclusively criminal suffices to constitute complicity, regardless of whether the party concerned was acting to pursue a commercial activity. The proceedings against Lafarge are the result of a complaint filed by the French Finance Ministry. 11 former Syrian employees and two NGOs. The company had evacuated its foreign staff when it left the country, but kept some Syrian employees.
We asked the company to stop the work, but they didn't stop. The company bears responsibility for all those who were arrested, killed, or kidnapped.
My nephew Yassin worked for Lafarge. He went from here to go to his work, and ISIL arrested him and put him in jail. After 4 months, we went to see ISIL and asked about Yassin. They opened his file and told us they executed him.
Lafarge is not the first multinational to be accused of similar accusations, but such cases have rarely been brought to trial. 12 Nigerians took energy giant Shell to court in the US for its role in rights abuses in the Niger Delta in the 1990s. The Supreme Court dismissed the case in 2013, saying it did not have jurisdiction over the matter. Rights groups also challenged companies suspected of concealing crimes against humanity in China's Xinjiang region. Let's bring in our guests in Paris. We have Nasira Genif. She is a sociologist and professor at the University of Paris 8. In Berlin, we have Kanel Leweiter, a legal advisor at the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights, one of the organizations that filed the complaint against Lafarge. In Doha, Marwan Qabalan, head of policy analysis at the Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies. Welcome to the program. Nasira, how significant is the ruling that came out in Paris from the court about the case of Lafarge?
I would say that it's a breakthrough. It's quite surprising, especially after the Court of Appeal decision that took place now 2 years ago. And it's a very strong sign and signal towards those that think that business as usual can go on, especially on war fronts, in all kind of places where wars are being waged by especially Occidental and Western countries. So I would say that it's quite striking, especially considering that yesterday was the first day of the 9-month-long trial of people responsible for the attacks on November 2, 2015 in Paris. So it has a very strong symbolic and political range.
Kanel, this has been a long ride for your organization, but do you think that you've reached a point where you could say it's just a matter of time before Lafarge faces the main charge, which is complicity in crimes against humanity?
Yes, I would definitely say so. So it's a breakthrough. Now we have to see, the appeals courts will have to rule again on whether Lafarge was right in asking the cancellation of this charge for complicity in crimes against humanity. So we will have to see how the new appeals court, like newly composed, will deal with this request from Lafarge. We know that it will do so, bearing in mind the new interpretation of complicity that the Supreme Court yesterday ruled, and which is, we can go in details about that if you want, but once the appeals court will confirm that the indictment for complicity in crimes against humanity has to be maintained, mm-hmm. based on this new interpretation of complicity, we can hope for a trial, not only on this charge of complicity for crimes against humanity, but also on the other charges mm-hmm. of financing of terrorist enterprise and endangerment of people's lives.
Marwan, it's been almost like 10 years since the start of the uprising in Syria, and many companies have been operating in areas widely accused of colluding with armed groups, including ISIL. This ruling, does it put more emphasis now than ever on every international, multinational company that was operating in Syria?
Absolutely right, Hisham. I think it shed the light. It shed some light, actually, on this illicit business between international companies and some violent groups in Syria. But this particular case is unique in the sense that it's dealing with a company that has a very strong ties to the French government. If we want to put this into context, maybe we need to speak a little bit about how important this project was actually for both France and the Syrian regime at the time when it was first built, actually in 2008. Hisham, the Lafarge cement factory was the largest single foreign investment project in Syria ever. It cost Lafarge more than $680 million at the time, actually, to build one of the largest and most modern cement factory, not only in Syria, but in the entire Middle East. The production of that factory was like 8,000 tons of cement a day, worth of $500,000. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge investment, actually, by the French. And it was a joint venture, in fact, between the French and businessmen who were very close to the Syrian regime at that time. And because of this huge investment, the company actually did not want actually to desert the factory or leave it actually to be looted or be dismantled by militant groups at that time. So they were actually keen to protect it and to keep it in operation. They don't want to lose all the money that invested at that time in Syria. So this is why it's a unique case in the case of Lafarge.
Nasira, the legal team of Lafarge is quite obvious. They were trying to scrap the crime against humanity charge against them. But then the ruling came out towards another direction, which is basically magistrates will have to reinvestigate the whole case. Mm-hmm. It could be a breakthrough, as you said earlier, but at the same time, it could just open the window for Lafarge to bring about a stronger team in the near future and say, you know what? We're not to be held accountable at all. There's absolutely no strong evidence we've been doing something dodgy in Syria.
Yes, but I think they will have then to argue word by word, sentence by sentence about what the Court of Cassation just stated. And that makes the case very difficult for them. Of course, they can bring to the trial very efficient and very savvy groups of lawyers, but they will have to face that at a moment where being the country and the home of defense, which is what France claims to be, I mean, the country of human rights, is something that is more and more put into question. And Lafarge is giving this very strong expression and example of how human rights were just put aside. And this company, this international company that has close ties to the French state, as was just said, just looked the other way when it came to defending human rights. So the case is going to be very difficult for them to make, whatever they bring in terms of lawyers and money and influence also, and lobbying probably.
Canal, Lafarge is a financial Goliath in Europe. They have huge resources. They have the backing of a government. But then one of the key moments of their trial was when they said, you know what, we have the local staff operating in Syria, and it is the one which should be held responsible for any mistakes. As far as we are concerned, the top echelons of the company based in Paris, there's absolutely nothing wrong that we did. And how do you see that particular angle?
Yes, so this argument they made in the judicial inquiry is a very typical recurring argument that multinationals make to try exonerate from their responsibility. They hide behind their complex structures, and they hide behind the fact that they operate through subsidiaries that are abroad. And they pretend that they don't know what is happening in the subsidiaries, that they don't have the powers, the competence, or the means to stop actions of their subsidiaries abroad when those actions may lead to the commission of crimes or to the fueling of grave crimes. And this argument, I must say, we have rebutted quite easily, because the evidence in the file is extremely clear. When it comes to payments that have been made to several armed groups, including ISIS, it is clear that the members of the parent company in Paris, headquartered in Paris, were not only aware of those payments, but were sometimes instructing them together with the subsidiary. So there, this argument of Lafarge really doesn't hold anymore. And legally, this has translated in the decision of the appeals court, which hasn't been put into question by the Supreme. Hasn't been put into question by the Supreme Court, which is that Lafarge parent company is indicted for the financing of a terrorist enterprise, although the payments had originated from the accounts of its subsidiary abroad. And the court indicted the parent company because it took into account the evidence in the file showing that they were informed. But it also mentioned, and this is a very strong element of this case also, the appeals court mentioned that because Lafarge parent company has such a strong financial and operational control over its subsidiary, it wouldn't make sense legally to say that it cannot be held responsible for payments, criminal payments paid by the subsidiary.
Marwan, there is an international coalition against ISIL. It has its own counter-ISIS finance group, and it has been pretty much trying to work out ways to disrupt the financial flows going towards these groups. Do you think that this case in particular could be conducive to a broader investigation where we might see multinational companies being held accountable for shoddy businesses with groups like ISIL and other armed groups that were operating in areas in Syria, particularly the northeastern and northern parts of the country and the southeastern parts of Syria?
Absolutely. I think this time maybe, because usually the United States in particular, because as you know, Hisham, the Americans who are leading this war in order to undermine the network, the financing network of terrorism all over the world. They usually focus on Arab and Muslim countries, and I mean they keep come and go actually to the Gulf region in particular in order to disrupt and speak with the governments in order to undermine these networks. But sometimes you are really surprised to see that some of the big Western companies like Lafarge, for example, was very much involved into the business of financing ISIL. And also, if you want to look into another aspect of this issue, you can also see the link between the French government, Lafarge, and the YPG. Because I mean the French they have been relying very much, and Lavage also, they have been relying very much on the YPG regime in Syria, which was also considered by other countries in the region, such as Turkey, for example, as a terrorist organization. They were relying on them in order to protect the Lavage cement factory in Syria. So I think we have to look very carefully into all sorts of business activities of these companies, not only in terms of financial turnover, but also in terms of the links that they are having with other non-state actors in the region, like the YPG, for example.
Nasira, you spoke about the crucial timing of the ruling because it coincides at the same time with the trial of the main suspect of the rampage that killed 130 people in France in 2015. Could this be a moment where the judges, the courts will say, you know what, it's about time to tackle this, because this is a serious issue that could also ultimately have serious ramifications on Lafarge itself?
Yes, I think that what it brings to the picture is the complexity of what was happening back then at the beginning of the uprising in Syria, the way it was repressed, of course, by the Syrian state, the way ISIS eventually became and prevailed in Syria. But this means that it has ramification all across the region, all the way through the Mediterranean to Paris. And this is also important to stress the fact that we cannot think in terms of war and terror, this era that we entered in 2001 and that we are still living in, without including all parts that took advantage of these wars, that raised their own prosperity on these wars. And this is something that might change the backdrop of the trial that is happening right now in Paris and bring into the picture things that usually are kept aside or that are overlooked or that a lot of states would just want to turn a blind eye on. And this has to be part of the picture now, the complexity and all the interests that took part into what led to the rampage in Paris, but more widely to all these wars and their casualties.
Canal, navigating through the judicial system all over the world is a very complex task, as you know. But do you see an opening here where activists could say, you know what, it's about time to focus on companies operating in areas where there are human rights violations and abuses? We've seen a case now being brought against companies operating in Xinjiang, because they're saying basically, how can you operate in a place where the Uyghur community is being persecuted by the Chinese government?
Yes, I think really this case has the potential to encourage, foster either ongoing cases on corporate accountability against multinationals, but also maybe encourage other people to take initiatives like that. You were talking about the Uyghurs case. There's also a case pending before the International Criminal Court related to the responsibility of arms traders from different European countries who persist in exporting weapons to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Although those two countries are leading the coalition that appears to have committed systematic attacks on civilians in Yemen. So I think now the ruling that Lafarge, that the Supreme Court gave yesterday, is really going to inform the way those cases will be dealt by the different courts concerned.
Marwan, these are companies, middlemen, people working in the underground, some of them affiliated with huge organizations, with governments. We've seen in the past many evidences directing toward very high-profile people who were dealing with the Syrian government, with ISIL, when it comes to shipments of oil. But ultimately, you don't get a sense that the international community is willing to move forward and bring all these people accountable. What's the general sentiment among the Syrian people when they look at these particular cases that go somehow unpunished by the international community?
Well, Hisham, I think, first of all, I mean, we need maybe to look at this greater picture of the war economy that has been emerging in Syria over the past 10 years, in which, as you said, we have so many warlords, we have so many middlemen who are, in fact, profiting on the expense of those people actually who have paid the heaviest price during the war. And you are absolutely right. I think we have to think about how at this particular stage we need to focus on transitional justice for those people who their life actually has been destroyed by this war and by this also business activities by the warlords and by the middlemen and by the companies who have been mainly concerned about how to make profit out of this war. But at this point of the crisis, Hisham, most people right now are concerned about keeping the peace and try to reach a comprehensive ceasefire to the conflict in Syria, because as you know, over the past few weeks, there has been a renewal of confrontation in the southern part of Syria, mainly in Daraa. Mm-hmm. We see almost daily bombardment of civilian neighborhoods in Idlib in the north. So right now, most people are focusing on how actually to stop this conflict mm-hmm. before start dealing with the other aspects of it, including transitional justice and helping people actually to regain their life.
Nasira, you have the ethics and you have the greedy companies looking for profit, and both collide most of the time. But do you think that this could be the moment where the momentum should be building towards rewriting the laws internationally to put an end to the practice of these companies taking advantage of cover from their own governments to take money from people in countries who face destruction and death?
Yes, absolutely. But I think that we have the tools and the means to do that. It's just that so far, this kind of international companies such as Lafarge and others just felt that national and international laws were not made for them, that they could just get away with it and just find ways to bypass any kind of control. And so the decision of the Court of Cassation is most meaningful in that respect, mm-hmm. because it means that they cannot, they are just as any other entity, and they can fall under the rule and the strength of these laws and of these different bodies of jurisdiction. And this is something quite striking and might open new paths for mm-hmm. Those entities and international companies that rely on the laws of capitalism, so that they become accountable for the crimes that they take part in.
Canel, you know that as a legal advisor that ultimately you would have to deal with companies affiliated with governments. They have loads of cash and they have a cover and they have the backing of strong governments all over the world. Do you feel like that we've reached the point where NGOs will be more equipped, will have more backing, particularly from the people all over the world, to put an end to the practice of greedy companies working in war zones?
So we are gathering experiences, we're gathering expertise on what are the obstacles that are faced in those judicial proceedings, and we surely, I think, get better in anticipating those obstacles. But when it comes to governments and to the fact that governments are also linked sometimes to those business activities, I think we're seeing this trend in the business and human rights movement more and more. Then those cases of corporate accountability usually do not only involve a company, but also sometimes have the support of a state. For instance, I was talking about those arms exports cases earlier. Their arms exports or arms traders are given export licenses by governments. We also know in cases related to climate change or to pollution that industrial exploitation projects of land also beneficiate from licenses to exploit the land or to open. So this is definitely a trend we need to monitor.
Canel Lavita, Nasira Genev, and Marwan Qabalan, I really appreciate your insight and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahlbarra, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.